Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as I said earlier, you know, one of the things that's really concerning to me, and you look at the day, you know, the day Trump lost, some pretty significant court cases over the tax returns, over the immigration, over the use of the money for the wall, some pretty substantial losses. And again, you know, this is one of those moments where, you know, I don't think he even cares because he knows he's gaming the system. He knows he's rigging the system, and he knows that that his base, they're not going to care, which is why I think moving forward on this impeachment inquiry is so very important. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the news of the day, I've asked Jeff Hauser to come talk with us. Jeff is the executive director of the Revolving Door Project at the Center for Economic and Policy Research. Jeff, thanks for taking time for us.
Always, my pleasure.
So I look at this, you know, this kind of throwaway question that a pool reporter asked about, you know, the losses that he suffered in the courts today, and he's basically like, hey, you know, look, I've appointed 182 judges. I think if he thinks he can appoint some more, he might walk away from all of this.
Yeah, one of the most disturbing elements of the news today, and there are so many, even just in the United States, let alone looking around the world, was the report of the dissent in Trump's defeat at the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit is often considered the second most important court in the land. It's one of the 12 courts of appeals right below the Supreme Court, but it's the one in Washington, D.C., and so each department of the federal government is located in D.C., and so lots of the key cases come through D.C. And Trump indeed lost 2-1. But the one dissent was from Trump appointee Judge Rao, and Judge Rao wrote one of the most risible, just make it up, you know, Democrats don't have the impeachment authority, Republican, this would be totally different if Barack Obama were president, opinions of all time. It makes no sense, but it was a signal that Judge Rao thinks, you know, she can become Justice Rao and be appointed to the Supreme Court if there is another vacancy for Trump. And Trump has done a very smart thing along with Mitch McConnell, which is appoint the 182 judges that he referenced. And the 182 judges that Trump has appointed are worse than even the George H.W. Bush or George W. Bush judges of the relatively recent past. These are partisan hacks who are loyal to Donald Trump. And that's been Mitch McConnell's top priority for the last 3 years. It's Donald Trump's get-out-of-jail-free card, and so they have played it together extremely well. And it's very worrisome how many judges across the country right now are Trump hacks. And it also should be a lesson to the Democratic Party to take the issue of appointing judges very seriously. I mean, Barack Obama became president in 2009 amidst two wars and a massive near depression, so it's understandable that his eye may not have been on every different important issue, but he definitely was slow to move on judicial nominations in 2009 and 2010. And I'd like to think the next time there's a Democratic president, they will be a little bit more on the ball.
Well, I mean, ultimately, when you look at the what Trump's gotten away with these 182 judges, this goes back to Mitch McConnell. I mean, and you got to give, on a certain level, you got to give McConnell some, I'm not going to say credit, but, you know, some level of tip your hat at him, because he had the vision and foresight to block just about every appointment that Obama made, or, you know, in the case of Merrick Garland, to just completely obstruct and say, we're just not doing our job at all. So to me, this is, you know, this is McConnell's doing as much as it is Trump's.
Absolutely. I mean, there are the two smartest Republicans in my adult life have been Dick Cheney and Mitch McConnell. And I think these are two people that Democrats and progressives should learn from, even if they should not be emulated in their lack of values. And, you know, not every slimy thing they do should be duplicated by Democrats. But Dick Cheney understood that personnel is policy and was in charge of installing people all throughout the Bush administration that were loyal to Cheney and extremely right-wing, and he understood the power of the executive branch. And Mitch McConnell, he made his bones within the Republican Party by being the leading opponent of campaign finance reform. And like some of the leading campaign finance cases where laws that were designed to reduce corruption, McConnell was the lead plaintiff trying to eliminate those laws and claim that they somehow violated freedom of speech. McConnell has understood that raising money and fighting in the courts to make the corporations happy, that's like his specialty within the Republican Party. He understands the power of the judiciary. He, when Obama got more focused on judges, he found himself constantly steamrolled by Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell made it his priority. He understood its importance. And I think progressives should learn. You know, they should learn from Cheney that the executive branch matters a lot, and they should learn from McConnell that judges matter a lot.
No. I mean, you go back to 2015 and 2016 during the election. I was, you know, people were saying, well, I don't like Hillary Clinton, and, you know, I can't vote for her. I'm going, well, the reason you vote for her is, one, the Supreme Court, but really the entire judicial system. It's the person who appoints those judges. Do you want people who are going to arbitrate the law fairly? Do you want people who have, some actual credential? Or do you want someone who's a partisan political hack? And I mean, you look at some of the names that Trump has put out over the years, over this last 2 years, and it's incredible. I mean, there was the one guy somewhere down in Alabama, if I remember, who had never actually tried a case. He was basically a blogger who was, you know, a Trump sycophant and never really tried a case, probably had not even seen the inside of a courtroom, but we're going to give him a lifetime appointment to the federal bench? Really?
Yeah, I mean, I think he had in his defense watched several seasons of Law and Order on television, so he thought that might satisfy the experience required to be a federal judge. But I think like the key thing in terms of why people should care about the courts that is often overlooked is how important courts are on economic issues, on basic issues of fairness, be the issue employer versus employee, be the issue consumer versus big corporation, be whatever, you know, victim of, you know, chemical spill or what have you. Basically, if you're not in the top 0.1% of the economy, you're going to want a progressive judge who's going to be fair to the little guy, because that is not what Trump judges are. Trump, the judge in the D.C. Circuit who dissented on Trump's behalf on the tax return case, her job before becoming a judge was she was running this office called OIRA, which is this awful acronym in Washington, D.C., but it's basically this office within the Office of Management and Budget that looks at all regulations and essentially tries to figure out whether or not the regulations are too mean to employers. So her job was to make sure that even in the Trump administration, employers and rich corporations got the best possible deal. That's the type of person that Trump appoints to the courts. And the economic stakes of what type of person is on the federal judiciary are enormous. Our country has become much less equal because the federal society and corporate-dominated judiciary has whittled away at the rights of ordinary people.
No, I mean, you just look at, you know, the Supreme Court case, the Janus decision that, you know, with just the stroke of a pen for the public sector workers created an entire right to work country. It's not even that states have the rights anymore to do this. It's now a broad brush. And you go back through a lot of the other stuff, the regulatory attacks that have gone on, the forced arbitration stuff that has happened for workers and consumers. I mean, it's just spot on what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of why one of the big fights within the Democratic Party has to be about what type of person will be put on the bench. In the 1960s, you had Arthur Goldberg was a former general counsel of the steelworkers, and he became a justice on the Supreme Court. It would be great to see labor lawyers be part of the pool that provides potential judges when a Democrat is president, because the other side loves to appoint people who used to represent employers.
Yeah.
It would be great to have someone whose perspective is formed from having, you know, worked with unions and worked with workers and fought against corporate power, to see people like that join the judiciary and provide some diversity of experience so not everyone is a, you know, big white-collar law firm corporate lawyer turned judge.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing in how we're not only just polarizing a system, but we're going back to the old days of patronage. And I look at this story today from this National Security Advisor, Robert O'Brien, saying that they're going to cut the career staff nearly in half, and they're going to replace those jobs with patronage jobs. And I'm going, you know, this is bad.
Yeah, it's terrible. We need to return to a system in which you can work for the federal government because you're a patriot and make that your career. You don't see it as a stepping stone to a better paying job in the private sector. But you can also rise up to a pretty serious level, and, you know, just develop expertise and deploy it on behalf of the country. Believe in your country, work for your country. And I think the reason why you would not want that if you're Donald Trump is very clear. Yep. In the events of the last few weeks. The whistleblower who, you know, allowed us to know about Ukraine Gate, or however we want to call it, but that person took upon themselves enormous risk in coming forward. And it's very clear that the entire right-wing apparatus is just waiting for the opportunity to try to destroy this person's life, and this person's entire family's life is going to be destabilized if and when their identity is made public. Similarly, a very brave woman who got who had been ambassador to Ukraine, a career diplomat. I mean, being ambassador to Ukraine is a big job because that's a country that's under assault from Russia. That's the type of, you know, you need a real expert. You don't put a donor in charge as ambassador to Ukraine. You need a real skilled diplomat, and she's a lifelong diplomat. She got brought back because Rudy Giuliani was like, she's not playing ball. We're trying to, you know, work this corrupt set of deals in Ukraine, and she won't play ball, and so she got fired. Pompeo said, don't testify to Congress, and the former ambassador is like, no, I've been subpoenaed by Congress and I'm going to testify. And apparently she spent the day in a closed session of the House, but she was apparently enormously inspirational, and what she had to say was incredibly worrisome about the Trump administration's conduct. Yeah. And that's the type of patriot that we need more of in this country, and we need to empower them. And what we don't need is a bunch of political hacks running the National Security Council.
No, you're absolutely right. And that again, is the reason for this announcement for me today, is you see her testifying, the whistleblower, and not just the whistleblower, but the people who are talking to the whistleblower, I'm assuming were career folks in different agencies who were on that call, because according to the complaint, there was more than one person that talked to him. I mean, there were several people on that. I think he said more than a half a dozen. So that tells me there are other people in there who aren't happy with what this administration is doing.
Yeah, there are a lot of people. I mean, there's not a deep state. The term deep state historically refers to a structure within the Turkish society, the military sort of dominating society and being connected. And that doesn't exist in D.C. I mean, there are things in D.C. that are not great, but the, you know, people who are career at CIA are different than the people who are career at the State Department, who are career different than career Army, which is different than career Navy, et cetera, et cetera. These are all distinct universes. But what does unite people who are career members of the national, you know, the federal government, is that they are patriots. And if you're Donald Trump and you think that the state is you and you are the state, you want people in the government who serve you, because you think that is the job of someone working for the government, is to work for Donald Trump. And, you know, most of the people who work in the U.S. government, they may or may not have exactly our ideology on any given topic. And, you know, obviously people disagree on a lot of issues, but they are committed patriots. And that is something that is antithetical to Trump's vision for the country.
Yeah, for him, it's got to be committed to him, which is why I think you have seen so many people come and go in this administration. And even, look, his personal lawyer today, he threw under the bus. So I got to wonder what the view from under the bus looks like for Rudy Giuliani.
Yeah, this is amazing. I mean, you know, Rudy Giuliani, who's already fighting yet another divorce, which is number three or number four, depending on how you deal with his annulment. He's got that fight going on, and now he's an international figure of ridicule, being laughed at by his former client and buddy, Donald Trump. It just goes to show you that there is no one who comes out of a collaboration with Donald Trump better for it. No matter what they think the situation is going to be like, no one is enhanced by working with Donald Trump, which is what I'd like to think over time other Republicans are learning.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, I hope they're looking at, you know, all of these people under the bus, under the wheels of the bus, and going, hey, I'm not special. It's going to be me if I do this, which is why I have, you know, just a little bit of hope that maybe there's some soul left in the Republican Party, that as this impeachment inquiry goes forward, that maybe the Republicans in the Senate, you know, find a spine, find their soul, find, you know, I don't know, you know, find religion, whatever, and you know, get off of this, you know, this blind faith support of this guy.
Yeah, the most heartening news to me of the week was somewhat obscure, but a veteran congressman from Illinois named John Shimkus, whose politics are very much not my politics. But is still, you know, of the old vintage in which Republican politicians, you know, read their briefing papers and were, you know, somewhat in, you know, like were informed people who just, you know, may not have share my worldview. Well, John Shimkus said that Donald Trump no longer has his support, that he can no longer support Donald Trump because of the way he threw the Kurds under the bus. And I do think the way Trump threw the Kurds under the bus, it's horrifying, and I think it's been resonating with a lot of Republicans for whom a lot of other issues somehow or another have not resonated. And so I look to what does that mean for, if let's say you're Pat Roberts from Kansas and you're retiring and you're never running in another election, or you're Lamar Alexander from Tennessee and you're retiring and you're never running in another election, or you're Mitt Romney, who's kind of a punching bag by Donald Trump, and, you know, you're not up for re-election for 5 years, and at that point you'll be 80. You look at these people, what do they have to lose? They can be marked as heroes if they were to turn on Trump. And if you have people like that turning, it becomes very difficult for your Cory Gardner up for re-election, your Martha McSally up for re-election, your Susan Collins up for re-election, your Joni Ernst up for re-election, your Tom Tillis up for re-election. And it becomes pretty difficult for those people to stay with Trump. And once you start getting to, you know, 5 to 8 Republicans, I mean, the question is, at what point in time do they decide to jump together? Because while I think more elected Republicans are Trumpist than some people would want you to believe, a lot of them do know that Trump is unfit, and right, they're okay with the idea of a Mike Pence presidency. And so that's all it would take.
Yeah,
still a lot. But
no, look, I'm really I'm really not. A Pence presidency scares me even more than Trump, to be honest.
I mean, there's like a little less instability and a little less corruption and a little bit.
But there's,
you know,
the
more
low.
Competently problematic. I will say, though, that I mean, Pence also does kind of let. Pence is not as talented a politician as Trump.
Right.
I mean, no matter how much we think Trump's bad, Trump's entertaining. And I don't think anyone's ever accused Mike Pence of being interesting.
No. But that's that. See, I think after Trump, that kind of boring kind of, okay, we don't have to think about him anymore, kind of would play. And then they could, you know, maybe get a whole bunch of really ugly stuff through without anybody paying attention, because everybody just said, you know what, I just want the pain to stop. That's where my fear lies.
Well, I mean, you know, I want Trump out just because I think he's extremely destabilizing and worrisome to the security of the country. But I do think that I don't think Trump would go quietly, and I do think a fracture within the Republican Party between people who think that the mainstream stabbed their man in the back and the mainstream itself would be pretty hard to heal.
Yeah.
They can always heal it eventually, because, you know, if a Democrat's doing progressive stuff, they can unite against a Democratic president. But I think in the short run, a President Pence would have to deal with a pretty fractured party.
Yeah, but I don't think, no matter who becomes president in 2021, I think you're going to have a fractured country, and I don't know how you pull this back. I mean, this impeachment, you know, everyone keeps saying, you know, it's tearing us apart, but I don't know how much further apart we can get when you look at things. And I have people all the time saying, well, we shouldn't impeach. I go, you know, to me, this is the issue. I wasn't so much on the impeachment bandwagon over the Mueller report, but this, to me, this is simple enough to understand. You have a sitting U.S. president asking a foreign leader to target an American citizen. Aside from the fact that American citizen is running for president as a political opponent, but just the fact that he's asking someone else to target an American citizen, to me, that rises to that level. But, you know, there are other people saying, well, we shouldn't do this because the Senate's not going to convict. And I don't believe they will. I don't think you get 20 Republicans to side against Trump. I just don't.
Well, I mean, it's to be seen, but I do think that certainty is not doesn't have a great batting average in American politics in the last decade. And right. So I just would mostly suggest that you could at least spin out scenarios in which he's convicted, and we should not view we shouldn't view impeachment as a moral necessity and as a demonstration of spine and as a way to make Democrats feel enough courage to move forward on other forms of oversight as well. And we're certainly seeing apparently an uptick in whistleblowers more generally across other issues. They're not all processed, but apparently congressional Democrats are saying that they are hearing from more whistleblowers, which is very encouraging. And I think that this process is a good one for the country. And I think ducking fights because the mean side will continue to be mean is a bad approach. So I think we both agree that it's good that the Democrats are moving forward.
No, I'm all in favor. Look, at some point, you know, someone had asked me, I did a panel at Netroots Nation on how you win back the white working class. And I said, you got to fight. You've got to, when the battle comes up, when the fight comes up, you got to fight back. You just can't be standing on the sideline offering to hold somebody's coat. You got to ball up your little digits and you got to get in there and mix it up. Regardless of the outcome, I think the Democrats have to get in there and mix it up. And they are. And to their credit on this issue, they are.
Yeah, I mean, I think people want it. If your rhetoric suggests that you think a situation's a crisis, but your actions are not consistent with that, then you just come off like a standard politician who says stuff and doesn't really mean it.
No.
In general, I think, yeah, voters respond to authenticity and someone who's going to really fight for principles. And they don't. It's not so much like how many different parts of their platform do I exactly agree with. It's who's willing to take on tough opponents and fight.
That's it. Jeff, I appreciate the thoughts. I appreciate the time. Always great talking with you. I'll look forward to you coming back real soon.
That'd be great. Take care.
Good stuff. Our good friend Jeff Hauser. Make sure you check out the work that they do over at the Center for Economic Policy and for Economic and Policy Research. He's the executive director of the Revolving Door Project. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. You listen to The Rick Smith Show.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.